Hi, everyone. This is Jamie Lynn Watson, also known as the Sprint Turn on the Sprint commercials, and you are listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Hey, what is up, everybody? How are you? Good afternoon, good morning, good evening. Welcome to the program. I don't know when you guys decide to listen, but I'm glad you decide to spend your next, I don't know how long this episode will be, but your next good amount of time with us. Mike Berlew, how are you?
Doing well, Scott. Nothing says a great show like not knowing the episode number, not knowing the name of the show, not knowing how long it'll go, or what the hell we're going to talk about.
Listen, I know.
Those are the keys to life.
I know the name of the show. The name of the show is Verbal Shenanigans. I believe this is episode 291. 291.
There you go.
As we crawl our way to episode 300. Okay, and again, that's when we hit the implosion button and we pack this up and we leave like an old tent.
And then 4 hours later realize there's nothing else in the world to do and then start recording 301.
Yeah. Mike, are you pandemic free? Or I mean, are you COVID free still?
I mean, I haven't taken a test, so by rule I don't.
I don't know, you know, Georgia's like the Wild West down there right now.
Well, I don't even know. Well, I do know at least one center because I had to bring my wife to her job because, of course, her hard drive died, so she had to bring her computer back to work. And I know going there, like, they were people in the coats and the masks and ready just to shove a Q-tip down my nasal passage. But I'm like, no, dropping off, no.
So is that there's a testing center there too, or?
At least where it was at. Yeah, it was quite unique. Like we pull up and we see the whole center and I'm looking at her. I'm like, do we have to get tested? And she's like, I don't think so. And then we're like parked and we're trying to call her IT team. Meanwhile, one of the people like walked up to her car and like knocking on the window. Hey, what are you up to? And so we had all that, and then we didn't have to get tested since we were just dropping off something. The other interesting thing about where her IT place was, like, as we drove there, I noticed there was like 8 or 10 guys on a basketball court at this gated place. Like
those are the Atlanta Hawks, like playing. Those are the Atlanta Hawks.
Well, it looked like a gated playground or something. I'm like, man, I'm surprised people are doing this or whatever. So we like go up and we drop off her laptop, and then as we drive back and I'm going past it, I kind of notice there's no gate openings to this place. So I just turn to my wife. Is your place next to a prison? She's like, yeah, pretty much.
So you were like, I'm going to get out and enjoy this lovely game of round ball. Maybe I'll watch.
I put it in park. I took off my shirt because I'm skins. And I just went in there. I'm like, who's got it?
Pass me the rock. Nice.
Original Jersey Dominique coming to get you, Georgia people.
We almost had Dominique Wilkins on our show.
That's true.
Didn't pan out, but we did get Bob Rathbone on the show.
Yeah, he was a good guest and all, but
he was really good.
Probably get him back on the show and just be like, yo, what's Dominique doing nowadays? Just hanging around the house or what's he up to?
Yeah, like what is he doing now? He should be knocking down our door to get on this show.
Yeah.
But I mean,
have you seen Hawks games? There's nothing to watch, even when before pre-pandemic.
I couldn't even tell you one Atlanta Hawk.
They got a good young nucleus. Trey Young is the big. He's the one that went to the All-Star team. Like, he got voted in. He was actually a starter.
Is he with one of the Kardashians? Is that him?
No, that's Ben Simmons. Unless he has one of the other ones, I don't know.
I got to tell you, I don't know if you've been tuning into the Last Dance. Have you been taking it in?
I still haven't got to it.
Now, me being Scotty Documentary, that's right up my right in my wheelhouse. But I got to tell you, man, it's as good as the hype, and I think. You know, this is a perfect segue here because I kind of wanted to talk about this anyway. I think it is because that was the golden era of basketball, in my opinion, especially for like guys our age, like those Lakers and Celtics teams leading into the Pistons teams, leading into the Bulls and the Knicks being good back then and the Jazz being good and the Dream Team era. I think that's the golden era of basketball. There's something special about it.
Yeah, through the 80s into the early 90s, I would say, even like mid-90s.
Yeah.
What was his last year? Was it 96?
98, I believe.
98?
And then
okay, so
I'm not sure what the Wizards years were, but.
Yeah, well, no, nobody counts the Wizards years. So no. I don't even think he does. Like, he went up to the Hall of Fame. He's like, listen, can you delete some stuff for me?
Yeah.
Like, I really don't want anybody to see that 23 Wizards outfit there.
But I'm telling you, Mike, when you watch the documentary, like, it brings back this, I don't know what it is, a nostalgia, I guess, or a love of, like, I've been out of the basketball game for so long. I tune on a LeBron playoff game, a Warriors, Cavs game, whatever it is. Yeah, but there's no passion behind it. I mean, I know I've told this before, I was a Bulls fan, like every kid my age was, you know, because that was... And when you watch this documentary, it brings it all back. It's amazing how you remember all the supporting cast, the Horace Grants and the B.J. Armstrong and the John Paxsons, Bill Cartwright. But it brings you right back. And then I became a Sonics fan because Sean Kemp, you know, blew my mind back then, caught my imagination for whatever reason. And I haven't had a team since they left, and I do think they will be back. But something about that error.
I guess it's just like where you look at it, and it was obviously they had superstars, but I think it was like very defined superstars. Yeah. Like nowadays, like they try to throw everybody out there, like they'll just throw out there. Well, who's the one that was on the Knicks that went over to the Mavericks?
Ron Harper?
No. He's like the Ukrainian or something. He was a guy who couldn't play in.
Yeah,
Porzingis. Kristaps Porzingis. Was a guy who couldn't play the European games because the mob was going to basically kill him over there.
Yeah.
But then, like, nowadays, they're like, oh, Porzingis is on primetime tonight. And it's like, no, don't care. No, pretty solid player. Good for him. Deserves his money. I'm not. Changing my schedule for him or anything.
Yeah.
I think it's just like overloaded amount of quote unquote superstars where it was like those teams back then, we had like one to two dominant players.
Yeah.
And like a cast of characters. And it was against other teams that was like one or two dominant players and the cast of characters where it was like, even though it was like dominated by certain teams, there was still an aura of anybody can win this. Like, it still was magical to me to see, like, me being a Sixers fan, Dr. J, with that crazy jam he did over Johnson in the finals to get that title. And they were in the mix and win the Celtics.
Yep.
And
I think,
like you say, before they bring it up, like, everybody just overlooks the Pistons, but the Pistons era was just, they were down dirty, and they were willing to, they were literally the do anything to win a title team.
It was funny, because leading up to this, and by coincidence, too, not by, like, oh, the documentary's coming, I had just recently watched Dennis Rodman 30 for 30, and, like, a couple weeks before that, I had watched the Pistons one about them being the, you know, the bullies and the bad guys and the Bill Laimbeer basically killing people in the paint. And Something about the game, though, too, was just a more technical game and more punishing, man. Like, these guys killed each other. You think back to, like, the Charles Woodsons and the Anthony Masons and the, you know, not Charles Woodson. Charles Oakley. Yeah, Charles Woodson probably did it too, but Charles Oakley. But those Knicks-Pacers games, you know, you grew up in this area. The Pacers-Knicks games were heated, and the Reggie Miller days, and I don't know, just when you turn this documentary on and you hear Marv Albert doing the Bulls games with that that NBC music or whatever, it's like, immediately, right? It brings like this gladiator-esque basketball games coming up. Like, oh man, I can't wait to, to watch what Jordan's gonna do tonight and whoever. And I think the wealth was more spread back then too, superstar wise. You know, you had that guy prefer each team, whereas they, you know, now it's the super team thing, which I know gets overblown a little bit, but you know, you focus on basically three teams every year and that's about it.
Well, if you think about, like, if you think of a guy who went to a team to win a title, the only one, like, the biggest name was like Bill Walton going to the Celtics when he was near the end of his career, or you can even say Parrish going to the Bulls just to collect a ring on the bench. But it wasn't like, all right, I'm the number one here. My team is so close. Screw it. I'm going to go over here with three other superstars and just lay it in, for lack of a better term.
There's something missing from the game. Now, I know the game is basically as big as ever with especially the kids and youth and in other countries, but there's something missing. It's almost like two different games, you know, like if that feels like a different, complete different product than now. Now it's like that run and gun, like a lot of different jerseys, like everything is like, feels very different about the NBA.
Yeah, we need to bring back Ron Artest in his prime. You know, Ron Artest, I'm running into the crowd and punching the wrong guy.
That's fine. I think that's why there was a point where, you know, I still didn't have a team. And I started rooting for the Pistons when Ben Wallace was around. I really liked him. He was kind of a throwback kind of player, you know, like Dennis Rodman-esque.
Yeah, there is no, like, grinders right now. It's like a center is almost useless on a team because it's like he's basically just a bigger guard.
Yes.
That's all he is. Like, I think that's what people kind of miss about the game. Like, if LeBron charged the paint in the 80s, there was McHale, there was Lambeer, there was Parrish. They were those guys, Charles Barkley in his rookie years. Yeah. They were just sitting there, oh, you're coming here. This ought to be interesting.
Yeah, Karl Malone.
That was a day. Oh, God, they would he would be murdered. And, and he'll get some in. I mean, too many people rag on LeBron. I mean, he's built like a tight end.
Oh, my God.
But believe me, he would have had to take a lot of lumps for him to establish LeBron James versus what today's LeBron James.
I think LeBron James is the genetically the best athlete I've ever seen. Like as far as size, that combination of size, speed, and coordination. To me, he's the best athlete I've ever seen.
Yeah. it's be hard to contend with it because, like I said, I mean, just. He's got girth, he's muscle, he's got a long game, he's got a short game. I mean, as much we josh about it, he is probably the best basketball player of the last decade,
for
no
sure.
doubt. But I mean, I guess
LeBron. I like LeBron. I am not in the LeBron comparing to. I think when you compare eras and stuff like that, it's almost impossible. And LeBron and Jordan are completely different type of player, you know?
I don't hate him, but I don't root for him.
Okay.
I'm not going to be the person, like the people say, oh, he's just a chump. It's like, no, he's a freaking animal and he knows what he's doing. But I can't deny a little bit about me, like that whole, let me get an ESPN just to say F you, Cleveland.
Yeah.
The fact that I would say his first title was won more on Wade and Who else was down there? Bosch, yeah. Then him. It took his second title for him to literally say, all right, I'm taking over. And then just, I get a little bit of the pompous with him. I don't, it's not enough where I'm like, I hate the guy because I feel he's got the stuff to back up the pompous, but I still get a little bit in it with him. You know what I mean?
I think off the court, he's just an amazing human being. I mean, if the reports are all true about like some of the things he does financially and some of the things he does for his hometown and some of the things he does with putting kids to schools and God knows everything else under the sun, if it's all true and it doesn't get broadcast all over the place, which makes me think it's true because this is the 24-hour news cycle United States where we only basically report bad things or controversy or anything. Yep. You know, meanwhile, guys putting kids through college and putting kids into special schools and programs. And, you know, if that's all true, he's a pretty, really charitable dude.
I had a family member once that brought up, like, who's Madea?
Tyler Perry.
Thank you. Tyler Perry. Like, he does crazy stuff. Like you'll always, like, the second this pandemic happened, he paid all the bills at the Walmart literally in my city. And he does this constantly. And like one of my family members kind of said like, oh, he does it for the tax write-offs. I'm like, well, he doesn't get all of it back. Yeah. I don't think that's how it works. No. I don't think I could give $5 to a charity and I just go to the government and be like, okay, give it back.
I think Tyler Perry's doing it out of the guilt of making so many Madea movies. So he just feels like he's got to pay society back.
But can you blame, like, I mean, as much as we rag on, like, the Madea movies or the Transformer movies and Michael Bay, you look how much money they make. Can you blame them?
No, there's an audience out there somewhere. Listen.
Both of those gentlemen in question are billionaires.
Yes.
They're billionaires based off of this. Can you truly blame them for just keep going with them?
Yeah. Well, that's why I think I'm different. I keep it real. You know, I keep getting these these six-figure offers for the podcast. I'm like, look, no, we're not gonna push your product. Like, we're not going to do that. We're going to stay true, and we're going to operate in the negatives. And one day we're going to be, all over the place on our own. I just turned down deal after deal. I'm also like Kristaps Porzingis. We're not allowed to podcast in Europe because the mob wants a piece of us, and I just keep fending them off.
Well, all I got to say is Tampax is the best tampon out there. And I will say I really suggest everybody go into Bulgaria with their wallets full of money and don't bring their cell phone.
Wow, Berlew throwing people to the wolves there.
No, I'm just having general conversation with you, man.
Oh, yeah, so
that's what we do here.
So just, natural.
Yeah, that has nothing to do with any kind of deals I make. No,
I am over our loss of podcast. If you tuned in last week, last episode, I guess, since we're kind of on the 2-week schedule as we speak, I'm over the loss of our hour and a half interview. Because it's been rescheduled, Mike. It's been rescheduled. We'll try to recreate the magic we had, and overall, I've been in a good mood, man. In a good mood today.
Yeah.
Part of it is
life
because
can't be too bad.
Part of it is because we were throwing. Because I've been thinking about Philly dog puns all day.
Yes. Which I started.
Like Mike. Like you don't understand. You don't. Like my brain sometimes, like. I get into these things and I can't stop thinking. Okay, let me digress for a second. So Mike posted a memory of his dog Callie in a Phillies jersey. Unfortunately, that poor dog. I called the ASPCA, so they're going to put down Mike, which is great. But no, he called his dog Chase Muttley, right?
Yeah. Yeah. The quick backstory was like when we adopted a dog. Like the conversation, I was going to wait till the following year to do it because I was concerned about job stuff at the time. And the wife showed me a picture of a dog. Ironically, it wasn't Callie, it was a different dog. And I could see the way she was like feeling for it. And I made a deal. I'm like, okay, if we get a dog this year, I get to name it.
Right.
And the original name was going to be Chase, and the cute little nickname would be Chase Muttley.
Right.
But we adopted Callie. I'm like, all right, she's known Callie for a while. Not going to mess with her mind where I had to retrain her. So we'll, so unofficially, her full name is Callie Chase Muttley.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So I commented, okay, I commented with, okay, how about Ryan Houndward, which...
I mean, it was a good start, but
It wasn't the best one. It was the first gut reaction.
Yeah.
Gut reaction one.
Yeah.
And then you went back. You came back with a zinger, and you said Mike Schmitzu, like Mike Schmidt, yeah, but a Shih Tzu. And the laughter ensued. And I came back with Pat Furl, like Pat Burl. And then my masterpiece, Mert Berlew, was, now this is more applicable to your dog, because you thought it was a Catahoula,
mm-hmm,
for all this time, and then you found out otherwise. But I said, Roy Catahoula Day.
That was pretty good. I give that. Like, your first one, I give you like a C+. Second one, that was straight A. That was A+ there.
Right, like Roy Holiday. And then you came back with manager Cujo Girardi and, mm-hmm, former manager Collie Manuel.
There you go.
So the hilarity ensued, but Berlew, here's the problem. I kept going.
And you didn't share with me? You're sharing now for the podcast?
Yeah, I figured... I was hopefully going to talk to you tonight, so I held off. And
is literally that the only reason why we're recording a day early? Your pregnant wife's like, can you spend some time with me? No, I got these Phillies puns involving dogs. I got to get off my chest.
I'm not going to deny nor confirm that is the reason why. But I don't know. I was just in a good mood today. I feel like it was. I wanted to break bread with you, Mike, and talk shop. So I had a couple more. Now you don't understand the way my brain works. I was doing some yard work today. It's just going. This is literally what I'm doing. I'm killing dandelions and thinking of like Phillies in my head, and then it's like the left side of my brain was thinking Phillies. Right side of my brain was thinking dogs and like all these terrible ones, nothing coming together. Then I worked out in my garage because that's basically what I do now. You know, lifting weights, and all I'm thinking about is there's got to be a good Phillies one. There's got to be a good Phillies one. So, Berlew, I came up with a few here if you would like to hear them.
Okay, I'm interested. Okay.
your famous shortstop, Berlew, Jimmy Paulins. Okay.
Not feeling that one.
What about
not feeling it.
Jonathan Papeldog?
It just seems like you dropped the last three with dog.
All right. Now, I knew those were bad ones, okay?
But okay.
I think I made it up with these next four. this one I think was good, all right? Darren Paulton.
That's good. That's decent. That's a decent one. I'll give it to you. I was trying to think of a breed with Dutch in it since that was his nickname, but I couldn't think of one. Not a well-known one.
All right. So Darren Paulton gets the Mike Dog Phillies approval. Now, this one was designed just for you, so it's not going to be funny to anybody else besides you because of your dog, Callie. This one is Johnny Callie's son.
All right.
All right. We all know you're one of your famous catchers turned announcer, John Cruff. Get it?
Okay. All right. All right, that's all right. That's all right. I'll accept that one.
All right, and this was my last good one here. Like I said, Catahoula Day was my
We went high on that first one. It was hard to come get back there.
But I went with Mike, famous Met and Philly, Pug McGraw, Mike.
That's a cute one to end on.
Thank you. stupidity. I'm just picturing listeners right now just going, let's see what Rogan's got. Let's see what Burr's got this week as soon as they hear these great dog puns. But Burlo, why not segue to a guest tonight? I don't know how that segues really, but either way, we'll figure it out. So Burlo, who we got tonight?
Tonight, Scott, we're going to be talking with actress and comedian Jamie Lynn Watson. She does a lot of improv comedy in New York, but you probably know her best as in the Sprint commercials as the Sprint Turn, along with the Can You Hear Me Now guy.
Yes.
So we're going to be chatting with her about what's it like to have commercial fame and what's life like as the Sprint Turn.
didn't the Call You Now guy switch phone companies?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, for what I understand, like, they literally, like, just straight up fired him, didn't say anything. I think one of the reasons was, like, he was closet gay and he wanted to come out, and it was, like, a rumor that they kind of did it just to, just because they didn't want him to be talking on the brand. So, and then Sprint came along and picked him up later on when they did a relaunch of their commercials.
Yeah. All right, so let's get Jamie Lynn Watson on the line.
Hello.
Hey, is this Jamie?
Hi, how are you?
Great. How are you, Jamie? Mike, Jamie, we should all be able to hear each other now.
Yep, I can hear fine, Scotty.
Great.
Fantastic. Hey.
Well, Jamie, thanks for joining us tonight. Where are we calling you from tonight?
I'm in New York, the center of it all.
Oh, yes.
Oh, jeez.
Wow. So please do not cough in the microphone too loud, all right?
Yeah, you never know. We don't know enough about this. So who knows? We can travel through the Skype.
Oh, that'd be the worst. You know? The internet goes, and all will be in a very bad R-rated movie, or PG-13, if it's coming through the internet.
Yeah, of course. And I mean, with all the Zoom calls and stuff, who knows how much it's been spreading.
Yeah, can you imagine that? A virus transferred via web?
Well, you know, it's they call a computer virus a virus for a reason. So, you know, electronics imitate life, I guess. Mm. They say art imitates life, but I guess.
Yes.
Technology.
Well, Jamie, yeah, tell us a little bit about your life. And I mean, well, obviously now you're doing the commercials for as the Sprint Turn. But let's go to the beginning and all. Were you a person who was a drama queen growing up? Were you a comedian in school? What kind of got you into the entertainment world?
Oh, honey. Well, I did have a shirt that said I was a drama queen, like, as a preteen. So
perfect.
I guess, you know, back in the early 2000s when all of the shirts had words on it. But yeah, so I grew up in Baltimore, actually. And both of my parents did theater as I was growing up. And they met doing theater. And so they, you know, were kind of expecting me to be a bit theatrical, which I was. And yeah, I did a lot of theater throughout high school. And then I went to NYU for college. I went to Tisch and I studied acting there. And then once I was there, I got into improv. It was something I really wanted to get into once I got to New York. And then I was finally able to do it finally. I'd never done it before I got to college. And then, yeah, ever since then, I've been performing and doing comedy and while I studied theater, I haven't done much of it since graduating, but tons of comedy for sure. But yeah, so that's, I guess that's me in a little nutshell.
Awesome. I wonder if we've ever crossed paths in the comedy community. Are you you are more stand up or are you more improv? I know you have some improv experience.
Yeah, I'm way more improv. I get very scared all by myself.
Oh, it's terrifying. It's terrifying every time.
Yeah. It's terrifying. But a lot of the stand ups I know are like, oh my God, I can't even imagine you working with a bunch of people at the same time.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, you mean someone to fall back on? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because I've said this a million times on the show. I miss my days in back in my like garage band, punk rock band days, because it was like, you know, we could play a dive bar or a bad crowd or, you know, we're all just up there together. Stand up, it's like just a bad show or a bad set and a weird set. You're driving home, like everything's sad. You're just, it's all you. It's miserable. Whereas like you have like a group of people, you kind of get through it together and you kind of learn that over time, like to bond with the other stand-up comics kind of after the show or before the set or right after on how bad of a gig that was. But it takes a long time to learn that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, no matter what comedy is specifically about, making friends, because, you know, you have to be asked on shows and asked to do sketches or film something or, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that's something I learned even throughout college doing comedy at NYU and at the same time performing and studying theater is that all of show business is just about making people want to work with you again.
Yep.
And just making friends and being fun to hang out with mostly, you know.
Right. For sure.
Talent has nothing to do with it. It's only me.
that's been my motto for a long time. Talent has nothing to do with anything.
No, the greatest people on earth are tolerable. That's the only characteristic in life.
Correct.
True.
So tell us a little bit about Danger Box. What was like the interview process to get into them, and what were they all about?
Yeah, so Danger Box, was my the NYU improv team. And I had definitely, like, as a teenager in high school, been a huge... All of improv kind of started for me when I fell deeply in love with John Ralphio on Parks and Recreation.
Right. Okay.
So I know it's kind of a strange, like, huge crush to have, but I thought he was like the funniest guy in the world, and I looked him up, and obviously he had a big UCB background.
Right.
So I was like, oh, I must research this and like insert hacking scene like in a movie, like words passing by me, like totally hacking into the system and discovering all this stuff about like, you know, UCB and comedy. And so I was like, oh, well, when I go to visit NYU and visit New York, I want to go see a UCB show. And my parents were like, yeah, sure. And, you know, we go to a dirty basement. And I specifically remember the show that we saw Sasir Zamata was in, who then went on to do like SNL only a few years later. And Nicole Byer was also in that show. So some people who like are much bigger now, but then were, you know, nobody's to the rest of America.
Right.
And so I loved it. I was like, I have to do this. I looked up all the teams at NYU. Danger Box was the one that was the longest running team there. So I signed up to go to the auditions. It was in some like rec room in one of the buildings. And where comedy is born. Yes. In weird all white rooms. So we did some like improv games and I was so nervous. And then a couple days later I get an email that says, hey, we're going to have callbacks. But we couldn't book a space at the school. So we're going to go to, his name was Corey, the president of the troops apartment. And it was a total prank. And it wasn't a callback. They were telling us we got on the team. And I was so excited because right before then, the few weeks leading up going into school, I was like miserable. I was like, I hate it here. I like can't make friends. I don't understand like the theater program. The first thing they asked us to do when we came in was like be the color blue. And I was like, I can't do that. I can't rap.
This is also the how absurd I am. Like, you're talking and I grabbed onto a comment where you're like the president of the troop, and I'm just picturing this guy like he's the only one who allows like certain games, and he's the one giving you like, hey, you're the color blue, you're orange, report back next week. Like, right. I can't get that fact, that image out of my head.
No, it seems that way, but in fact film student, so
yeah, right, yeah, yeah. It's an RA at NYU.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. But yeah, so I felt very out of sorts when I first got to school, and then once I got on the team, I felt very finally at home. Like, I was very much so like, oh, these are who my friends are going to be.
Yeah,
and that whole world of comedy, because not only Danger Box at NYU, but there's also Hammer Cats, which is the sketch team at NYU, which is very popular online. And like Donald Glover was on Hammer Cats, and you know, a lot of the SNL, like Sudi Green was on Hammer Cats and stuff like that. So you build this community that all of the people I still perform with today are part of that NYU world, or the people I regularly perform with. So, you know, thank God I, you know, was able to come up with something on a game of park bench or whatever it was we played when I was a sweet little 18-year-old freshman.
yeah, right.
Because, you know, who knows, you know, that I think that was a really big part of my life and, you know, got me really interested in improv and comedy.
Yep.
And Ben Schwartz, of course. So thank you, Ben.
Yeah, right.
So how long were you in the improv world and all? Did you continue outside of college, or are you still going right now?
Oh, I'm still going. I graduated from college in 2017, so I'm not that far out of you know, the world. I'm always like, I just graduated college, which I fully am not allowed to say that anymore. It's a little sad at this point, but, yeah, I still do a lot of improv. I have a team. We're called A Crazy Amazing Friendship, and
wait, back up one more time.
A Crazy Amazing Friendship.
I love improv groups because it always takes like, it takes at least three or four words to really. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. That's what they are. That group, like,
right. Right. So we do that. We perform a lot at the Brooklyn Comedy Collective, mostly, and then I'm also on a big sketch team called Lisa. There are like 12 of us, 13 of us, and we just do big shows every month. Everyone's allowed to have one bit, and then, you know, it ends up being an insanely long show because none of us are good at like editing ourselves.
hence the artist meets the editor. That's
exactly. Unfortunately, we have no editors.
Yeah, right, right, right.
But yeah, it's really fun, and you know, so I'm still performing. Not at the moment. I guess on Instagram I'm performing, but you know. Up until this point, yes, we every week at some point there's some random show I get to do, which is very fun, very nice.
Do you worry? Because, you know, I worry as far as doing stand up. Not worry, I guess. The time down has been kind of interesting. It's almost like a reset button. But have you do you start getting worried about, you know, with the pandemic going on and everything shutting everything down? Especially troops and improv, even probably worse as far as being on stage together. Want that? Do you get worried about where we all end after this?
I think comedy is going to be over after this. I think no one's ever going to laugh again. Probably.
Yeah, probably not.
No, I'm joking.
Yeah.
We've all all of the people I perform with, or even people I admire in the community that I don't even necessarily like know very well.
Yeah.
Everyone is going live on Instagram.
Yep.
Everyone is doing like Zoom rehearsals, Zoom shows. We did a Zoom improv jam last week. Like, I don't think, actually, if anything, content is like really booming right now. Like, now is the time people want to go like check out Instagram and see what people are doing. I mean,
I think also everybody's turning towards artists to get them through this time, right? We're turning to music, we're turning to actors, we're turning to movies, we're turning to film, everyone's turning to artists. So I hope when this all ends, the appreciation is there and the comedy audiences come roaring back.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think they've gone. I don't think audiences have gone anywhere. I think they're still there. And I think that's pretty evident due to the numbers of people who are tuning in to these like live streams and stuff.
Right.
And sharing videos and commenting on videos and, you know, and that's fun to a certain extent. Like, I was on my phone all day today and now I have like, you know, a massive headache. We can't do it all.
It's the worst. Yeah. I'm on my phone all day today and I'm like, I'm looking at literally nothing all day. Just a lot of nothing being put into my eyeballs all day long.
Right. No. It's so hard. Except now you can go watch a ton of Instagram live of comedians. They did a New York Times article, not a big one, but recently about this comedian, Meg Stalter, who she came from Chicago, but she lives in New York now.
Right.
And she's been doing stuff like every day. And it's really good. It's really funny. She does these like insane characters and she's really just like putting in the work. Because what else can we do?
Interesting.
Yeah.
But it's really cool. It's really interesting.
So let's kind of dive into your big moment. Kind of tell us about getting about the Sprint commercials. What was the process like? Were they looking for something specific, or were you kind of just improvising going in there? What was that whole experience like getting this job?
Yeah, so in my final year of school at NYU, did this program called Stone Street, which is, it's like a film and TV acting training sort of program. And one of the things they would do is that every week you would be able to go up in front of an agent, manager, do like a little something, and then you get their contact information. And I was able to get a commercial agent through that, which was great. I was like, oh, awesome. I am set like forever. But of course, like I wasn't getting sent out on a lot within that first year after graduating. And then they finally sent me out on something that I felt pretty ripe for, which was this like Sprintern character. I remember once they sent me out on a like, I think it was for Grand Theft Auto, and I was supposed to play like a really rundown prostitute who was just like so weird. And I was like,
I love that casting call. You'd be great. You know what? You'd be really great for a rundown prostitute.
Yeah.
I was very much so like, oh, I'm definitely going to the audition. I promise you, I will not get it. I don't think in my wardrobe that accounts for it, but it was funny. I kind of went in there and did more of like a Mae West when they were definitely looking more like Charlize Theron, like real acting. And I was like, I feel more comfortable like making it comedic. So anyway, I hadn't been out on a lot. And then the breakdown for this character was like, oh, she's peppy. They really want you to improvise in the room. Like it would be kind of a side character. You know, fun. And it was in my age range and stuff like that. So I went in and I was like, okay, well, I probably won't get this because I think when I go into rooms, the first thing you're supposed to think is like, I'm not going to get this because it helps me calm down a lot. Right. And I went in and I just like improvised off the little script they gave me and felt good about it. And then a couple days later, they said I had a callback. I went in for the callback. And I didn't know this. No one told me this would happen. But when I went, Paul was there, who is, you know, the guy, the Sprint guy, formerly Verizon guy, Paul.
Right.
So it was a chemistry test that no one told me was happening, which was very nerve-wracking, but it was really fun. He is so fun to work with, so easy to work with. We have a really similar sense of humor. And then, so we went through with that. We improvised. We did a couple of scripts, played around. And then I waited for a while. It was like around Christmas time that year. And I had to wait a bit, which was like torture because my parents were like, oh, my gosh, if you got this, it would be amazing. And yeah, but you can't tell anyone.
Right.
And. And then eventually I got word that I was doing it, and you know, we never knew if it would be, they wanted it to be recurring, but in the ad world, anything can change at any point. And, you know, we all knew that we were like, well, you know, it could be good, or they could realize I just don't work and we'll see. And, it's been 2 years now. So I guess it's worked for a while, which is,
that's cool.
Nice and fun, yeah. But that was my first ever really professional job on a real set, I'm so happy. It's been my first job.
Yeah, it's awesome.
It's my
first job, yeah. It's cool. So like, what do you got going on now? Well, I mean, obviously, no one has anything going on actually now. Right. But what's on the horizon here for you?
Yeah. So. A bunch of my friends, we actually wrote and produced and shot a web series back in November that we are slowly editing. The pilot is edited and we're sending it along to some festivals. But it's called The Basics. It's a web series about a bunch of, you know, quote unquote, basic girls who essentially to do improv and comedy. So, like kind of Instagram-y, like
nice,
you know, not the typical comedian woman you would see. And a lot of that came from like one time I saw a girl do improv in heels and I was like, how is this possible? but then I was like, well, why is that weird? Why do women have to conform to this one style? Essentially age and like losing their gender in order to do sketches and do improv and stuff. So we decided to really take it one direction and make these very hyper feminine girls exist in a very sort of male world, and essentially show that there's no reason why, you know, you can't step out of the box of what's considered, you know, quote unquote, your norm or like what you're supposed to be. So
cool.
Yes, we did that whole series and, we're slowly editing it. The pilot has been sent to a couple like festivals. So we're waiting to hear about that. If the festivals will even happen.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Virtual festivals.
Yeah, exactly. But, each of the girls, there are five girls. We each wrote one episode and it focuses around that character. And, yeah, cool. It's fun, you know. Hopefully it gets out there soon. I would love for it to get out during a quarantine because then people could binge it, you know.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Best time for something to stream right now.
Exactly.
So one kind of thing I want to dive into, you kind of brought up like females in the comedy world. I wasn't sure I was going to bring this up, but I found it interesting because I see you brought it up on your Instagram. How you're just out there, you're trying to entertain, you're enjoying yourself, and I guess you're like, you got brought up like on a foot fetish website, and I kind of find it, I don't know what's the more interesting part, that the foot fetish thing, or on the Instagram how you show that you have 40 stitches in your foot because of a Mike's Hard Lemonade bottle. So I'm kind of torn on which side I want you to push this story to.
I'm still waiting for my big break in that market, but you know,
yeah,
it hasn't happened yet.
Talk on all sides of it. I mean, I am like an E-list celebrity, I guess you could say. So I do very much so Google myself a lot.
Not a lot, but I have looked myself up before, and I stumbled upon this, you know, message board where people had mentioned me and seen pictures of that I had a photo shoot with my friend, like, 2 years ago or something, just to have some like updated photos. And I didn't realize that my feet being in the picture would lead into a whole thing.
Oh god.
I discovered this like a while ago, and then this past summer I was in a pool, and somehow some glass had gotten into the pool, and you know, we didn't realize it was dark, and my foot found it. And I got a big gash in my foot, 30 stitches. And, you know, unfortunately, like, we were all on edibles. So it was like a very strange night.
The foot fetish community was like, no.
So that's the thing, is that this accident happened. And I was like, oh, well, my poor foot fetish fans, like, I don't know how to break the news to them that I am maimed and I am, you know. I don't have nice feet anymore, although my arch is still intact and looks like a cartoon arch. It's great. But, so I decided to just post it. It was right when the quarantine began. I was like ready to stir up some drama. The drama never unfolded. No one, you know, rioted due to my scar. I think it is super funny that people would look at like a Sprint commercial, and see me and be like, God, I want to know what that girl's feet look like.
Oh, so God. Now you're going to open up a whole new avenue. They're like guys who are into like feet with scars on them. Now you're going to keep going deeper down the wormhole. You're going to be a celebrity in like the smallest niche possible.
Absolutely. There is absolutely a sect of that.
Scar, you know, feet.
People are into weird things, yes. Feet isn't even weird. That is such a common fetish, I think, now that we can't even consider it weird. It is so common now, but, you know, you hear about it.
I can't do it. Yeah. Just I just feel like, you know, cover the feet. Even, you know, even my wife, I'm like, I'll rub your feet if you got socks on. Like, it's okay.
But honestly, I'm honored. I'm honored to be on any message board if people discuss.
You may have seen her on scarfoot.com. Come on up to the stage.
Exactly.
I love it.
As long as it's not like terrible things, as long as, you know, they're being perfectly, you know, respectful in their, and they're really detailed too. Like, oh, the soles are really nice, but I really have to wait till I see if they're toes before I fully.
God. I can't handle that. I can't do it. I'm sorry. I'm out.
It's a real art. But yeah, so you know, it's kind of funny. I have a weird group of essentially like reply guys due to these commercials, which is you know, it's funny. It's pretty funny.
You could catch her at sprintfoot.com.
Every woman on TV has a profile on these foot websites. So
that's crazy.
Yeah.
Mom, I made it. Look.
Kind of. It's like, okay, so I guess my BFA was worth it. The Bachelor in Fine Arts from NYU, and I am on a foot fetish website. So
you go back to NYU once a year, talk to the students about your success.
Yes, once they saw that I was on a foot fetish message board, they did ask me back. I was supposed to do, I think, some sort of come back and talk to students at a theater group at NYU in the next week or so, but NYU shut down. Everything shut down, so that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
But I really appreciated the gesture. I was like, yeah, I can't wait to tell them about all the weird things I've since experienced.
Guys, this is the iPhone 11, and these are my feet.
There
you go.
Guys, you're spending 40-something grand a year. Mm-hmm. You too could be a foot model.
Yeah, there you go.
Just make sure somebody brings over a six-pack of Mike's Hard Lemonade. You send them out. We don't want that.
I know. It's kind of like, damn, you know, a scar that, like, you know, big, and you'd hope it was some worse ailment than a bottle of, like, the weakest thing someone drinks. Like,
I was going to say, or a bottle of something better.
Yeah.
It's a high schooler's drink.
I know. Not even, I think it's like days of high school past. It's not even like a thing anymore.
No, I know.
You stink. You stink.
Well, Jamie, we've had a blast talking to you. If anybody wants to, you know, get in touch with you or see what you're up to or learn more about your miniseries, where can they go?
Yeah, so you can follow me on Instagram. On Instagram, I'm jamie.lynn.watson. On Twitter, I'm PB and Jamie, like peanut butter and Jamie. Pretty hilarious. I came up with that in high school.
That's why she gets paid the big bucks, guys.
Yeah, that's why I get paid the big bucks. And, you know, once New York opens back up again, I'll be performing again at the Brooklyn Comedy Collective with Lisa and with A Crazy Amazing Friendship. And A Crazy Amazing Friendship has a weekly radio show, usually on Sundays at 2 on KPIS FM. But, you know, let's see when that returns too. But until then, Instagram is my your best bet of reaching me.
Love it. Jamie, thanks so much for joining us, and good luck with whatever you got going on, the comedy, the sprint stuff, or the improv stuff, or the foot modeling. No matter where you land, we'll be there to support you. So we love you, and thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. Stay safe. Yes. No coughing.
Mike, I want to be a foot model.
You think you got what it takes, Scotty? I mean, you seem like a person who doesn't, like, go get the pedicures or
I don't like people touching my feet.
Also, I don't think you do any kind of, like, special, like, foot soap or anything with the toenails.
Can't do it.
You can get into it, but it might be a rough market for what they're going to ask you to do.
Here's the thing, Mike. My right foot, beautiful. It was like it was sent from, like God was like, we need a size 13 right foot to model. Boom. Beautiful. Left foot? I got like a big toenail that's not, you know, it's got some kind of like weird growth thing going on that's been going on for years. I get dry heels on the left foot. I have no idea what's going on with the left foot and why it does not love me. But my right foot's beautiful, left foot not. Also, don't like my feet touch. Don't like anything. I just don't. I'm too sensitive. I feel like if I ever got a pedicure, I would like flinch and kick the woman in the face. Yeah.
So you'd be like a foot tease, if you will. Like some guy would like want to look at your feet and like, oh, can I touch you? You're like, no touching, not allowed. Even previous to the coronavirus, 6 feet.
Yeah.
6 feet are my 2 feet.
Okay? Yeah. Not that into the feet, man. Not that. Are you into the feet?
I really don't get it. I mean, somebody can have nice feet, but it's not something where I'm like, I'm gonna concentrate on that.
Like, do you look at your wife's feet and you're like, those are nice feet, or are you just like, yeah, that's her feet?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, not bad by any means. Right. I mean, there's nothing gnarly about my wife's feet, but there's nothing where I'm like, baby, I want you to take off that sock super slow tonight.
You don't mind that.
I want to put on some slow music and watch you heal that thing.
But you don't mind your wife's six toe. That's not a big deal.
What's that?
You don't mind your wife's six toe?
You know, it's a part of the family, just like everybody else, like the dog and the cat. So, you know, every piece of her is a Berlue now. That's all that matters.
I've heard you say that about all sorts of dead women, so no big deal. Oh, God. Go check Jamie out, guys, on her Instagram, Jamie Lynn Watson, and in the Sprint commercials. All right, Jamie Lynn Watson. Jamie Lynn Watson. That's
Queen of the Feet.
It's the best Watson we've ever worked with. Put it that way. But
absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
That's an inside joke, guys. But Mike, we're just talking off air. I'm still laughing at the idea of you laughing at Pug McGraw. Like, God damn it, Pug McGraw at like 3 o'clock in the morning when you get up to pee. Like,
yeah.
Oh, damn it. Like, that's one of those ones you're like, damn it, I should have thought of that stupid one.
Yeah. What do they call it? Earworms? It's one of those where it's like, you know, it's not going to leave the brain for like a good solid week where, like, you, whatever you do, you'd be going to the bathroom, you'd be making breakfast, and you start chuckling, and then you're more angry that you're enjoying it than anything.
Yeah. We've had a few of those before. What was the one you said that one time?
Well, the one time, this wasn't on the podcast or anything, but I was over your house. You were starting to date your wife at the time. I think I've only met her like, I want to say like 3 or 4 times. It was pretty
so about
young
5 years ago,
your guys' relationship. And I remember I was over your house, and I guess you guys got like ice cream the night before.
Uh-huh.
And like you got something with brownies in it and she got something else, but I think she like ate your ice cream or something, and it was like, it really bugged you for some reason. Like, you weren't in like a fire, like, it was one of those, I can't believe you ate my ice cream. You clearly had the rocky road, I had the chocolate brownie batter, and it was like a back and forth for like 8 minutes, and like I could literally see you pouting, and I just turned to you, I'm like, looks like somebody ate some frowny ice cream. And it was like the one, like the cheapest little knock, but like I remember we were talking about like 6 days later, like even you, like in the middle of the night, you know, we're just chatting about something, just frowny ice cream.
Looks like you had some brownies. nothing has changed. I still like to give my wife the business, if you will, and she'll do the same thing. It's kind of like a friendly debate, if you will. Like, we know that we know there's a joking undertone, but it's almost like seeing if you can get the other person to crack. Like, all right, I'm sorry, your ice cream. You know, like, it's trying to push them until they could. Until they crack.
Hmm.
It's nice.
And somehow you got married and you just had your 1 year. And you were texting me during your 1 year anniversary, which was odd to me.
Well, I mean, what did you think was happening? Sweet, passionate love into the middle of the night?
Wow. Well, I didn't get a butt dial with those sounds on it, but I mean, I figure at least you would have like a candlelight dinner with whatever place can deliver to you.
Well, let's keep in mind the wife is pregnant, so the tiredness is pretty, cat happens pretty quick, so a lot of times she's asleep by 8:30, 9 o'clock on the couch, and I'm up thinking of dog puns.
honey, wake up, Pug McGraw. She's like, who is that? Go back to sleep.
Honey, what do you think of John Cruff? Rough, get it? I don't know who the hell John Cruck is, and leave me alone. But yeah, the anniversary, we tried to do something. We tried to took a drive down to near New Hope, Pennsylvania, out in Bucks County over there, and there's like old covered bridges in like made in the 1800s or whatever, and it was a nice day, so we took a drive and did a couple of those, but other than that, we just ordered from Tap House 15 some food and had some food and whatnot, and I made a joke about it, but we decided that on our anniversary, we're going to try to keep a tradition where we write a letter to each other, maybe not on it, or like give each other a letter for each anniversary, and we said, like, you know, years from now, you know, if we keep it up, you know, we can give those letters to our kids or whatever, you know, like, you know, it'd be like a keepsake, if you will. And it's funny because I have such bad handwriting to begin with, and I have developed awful, like, carpal tunnel. Like, I type or write, my wrist just starts burning, man. And it's been that way for years, and it's probably getting worse, and probably something I, when this is all done, I should maybe go see somebody about, because it's bad. So I'll, like, write, like, a paragraph and then take a break and have to shake my hand out. And, like, my wife's letter looks like it was crafted by the gods themselves. Like, her handwriting's real neat. Everything's online, you know?
And like, hers looked like she had, like, it's like the 1800s, and she has the feather pen, and she's dipping it into the ink, and
yes,
the cursive is, like, immaculate, yep, all even, like, yep, something that should be hung in the museum next to We the People.
Yeah, it looks like a letter, like, a president would send to the troops or something to make it official, like, that we're going to war, boys, and, like, he signed the bottom, you know? And mine I compare to a prescription for OxyContin. It basically just looks like a doctor just went, fine, you know, give him 12 milligrams a day or whatever. But it's like my paragraphs are slanted one way. There's different spacing between words and sentences. There's cross outs. I'm left-handed, so when I write with a pen, I get the old left-handed smear. It's brutal. Is your handwriting that of ransom notes like mine or no?
I've been told I got decent handwriting. I only break out the cursive to do, like, a special letter, like, for the lady, like, like, when I write out stuff in the cards or something like that.
Yeah. Let's have a handwriting challenge. Let's each write the same note and put them side by side and see who let's put on Instagram and see who has the worst handwriting.
Yeah, I also feel we should send it to one of those guys who can, like, look at handwriting and determine which one of us is the killer. It would, or something to that effect.
We'll do it, right? And I will try to write my neatest attempt. So, like, I won't, like, write it like I, you know, like I normally do, like, quick. I'm going to try my hardest to write whatever we decide in my neatest handwriting. You try to do yours, and we'll see you as the neater handwriting, I guess.
So I guess I should start off with, did you do it in cursive?
Now, here's another serial, like, I write in, like a mixture of cursive and print. Like, I'll do, like I like S's in cursive, like, they're really nice and fun, and C's, but then, like, T's, like, Q's, like, can you make a capital Q in cursive anymore? What is that even?
It's a number two.
Yeah, it looks crazy, though. It goes below the line, there's a loop there, a Y. You ever do a Y in cursive? That's for killers. Like,
a Y in cursive is for killers.
Yes, it's really hard.
It's hard. Like, lowercase or uppercase?
Uppercase. That big old Y down.
The big old loop?
Yeah, big loop is tough, dude.
Is your life that hard you can't figure out cursive? Like this is not even going to be, like, an art that's passed down. Like, you are literally, like, the last generation of those cursive.
It ends with me.
You can't do capital letters?
It ends. I remember in elementary school, like, I was a pretty good student, but I was terrible at handwriting. And I remember my teacher saying to my mom, like, look, I gave him a B in handwriting just so he could make the honor roll. Like, like, I didn't deserve, like, I deserved an F. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. That's hardcore when it's like, I'm being nice, but let you know he's an idiot.
Listen, I don't want to hear it. I didn't know I was talking, doing a podcast with one of the forefathers here of cursive.
I didn't invent it, but I passed the art down for generations to enjoy. I'm sorry.
Wow.
I can't help it at all. I mean, I will say this. I can't deny when I do this stuff, I usually have to think for a few minutes on, okay, what is a capital T in in cursive again? What's that look right. like?
So that's what I'm saying is when you're writing something like in the stream of thought, right? Not like, hey, I'm doing cursive. Like it, mine is a conglomerate of print and cursive letters. And, you know, I kind of formed my own Sanskrit, if you will.
Out of curiosity, for your first anniversary with your wife, the wife that's carrying your child, did you ever think of writing it out on a scrap of paper and then writing it nice on a piece of paper to hand to her?
No, never crossed my mind.
Never? Never?
No,
not worth the effort?
No.
Your wife is not worth a capital Y, is what you're telling me.
Then it's disingenuine. Like, we wrote it, we actually wrote it, like, at the same time. Like, we didn't do it ahead of time this time. But maybe in the future we'll do it ahead of time and all. You know, Merle, I'll get one of those. Remember those? Remember the chalk things that you could put the multiple pieces in chalk and make the lines on the chalk? But maybe I'll do that on our wall and practice, you know?
Your child's looking at the wall and all, but who owned this house? John Wayne Gacy? What the hell?
I bet you.
I just see random letters on my wall here.
I bet you that's something kids would have no clue what it is. The multiple chalk holder. Like if you held that up, like what is this? I'd be curious to see if they knew what it was.
They'd probably say something like, oh, it's some kind of baking tool so you can poke holes into the bread in basic
format. So we like, that's kind of how we did the old anniversary thing, but it was, you know, for quarantine anniversary, it was good. I don't know what, if we were in like full force, we probably would have like got each other gifts and went to dinner or something like that. So, you know what? It's okay. It was the paper anniversary, if you will. So it was appropriate. We wrote a letter expressing our love for one another. And yeah. So,
and you went to Bridges in another state.
Nothing says anniversary is like Bridges.
Is it a bridge you guys seen before? Or is this like the exciting first encounter of said bridge?
Yeah. Like these are little tiny bridges from like the 1800s, covered bridges that like are still standing. And there's like a tour you can kind of drive by tour. I don't know, dude. It was something I found years ago and we. Quarantine time where you can't go in anywhere. This seemed like something we can do on a nice day, and it's been really terrible weather here. So that's what we did.
Were you guys just by yourself, or were there other people there? Where you're like, oh wow, can you guys believe this bridge?
No, one bridge had people there, but it was like part of like a park, and the other one was just like in the middle of nowhere. And then the wife wasn't feeling very well, and we kind of ate. We found a place to. Get like takeout window kind of thing. Ate and then headed back, and that was anniversary number one, the old paper anniversary, if you will.
Now, did you have to give up certain bridges because she was tired and sick?
Oh yeah, yeah. So the original,
hey,
yeah.
We can't forget the Charleston. Come on! That woodwork is just that screams anniversary love, babe. No, we can't go back.
Listen, just because you don't like history, Mike. Like I'm a very, I'm like an aficionado. You know what I mean? Like I appreciate the architecture of it.
You're a bridge expert?
No.
No.
But I like old things. I like old things.
Like that, just general stuff, and you know? Like somebody asks you a question, you're like, "No, that's not that old. I wouldn't know that."
Right?
That's
right.
Like 20 years ago. Come on, I need like 60 minimum.
Well, I mean, listen, I went and saw bridges. It's basically the only option I had. Bro, you might be lucky. You might not have to go to Disney for this anniversary. You might be out of luck.
It's pretty much not. The anniversary, it's pretty much a guarantee for what I understand. Disney ain't coming back till 2021, yeah, they're thinking.
I don't see that happening, but I think they'll be back.
It's going to be the new world.
Secretly, are you happy that you don't have to go to Disney?
There was no plans to go on the anniversary. Oh. So, the question mark is the 2021 is the Disney princess marathon weekend, That's up in the air. That's in February of 2021. So there's a question mark of, I mean, I guess it all boils down to if there's not a shot or something like that, how can you have a bunch of people running together in the streets of Disney?
Which princess are you planning to dress like?
I wasn't going to be a princess. What was going to happen was the wife was going to dress up, and then I was going to have some kind of t-shirt relevant to her princess outfit.
Oh, so the outfits are being planned a year ahead of time.
Well, you got to book early because they book up fast now.
See, I think it would be funny if you did if she was in the Belle outfit and you were just a beast chasing her down the the entire marathon, just chasing her.
Like, I could have got like a big buffalo head and put it on me and just start chasing, and if somebody gets in front of me, I just duck down and ram them, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I don't feel like you're being...
Get out of my kingdom!
I feel like you're not being creative enough here. I think a t-shirt's lame. A big bison head, really cool.
I mean, it all sounds well and good, but Disney kind of puts kiboshes on things. That's why you don't see like adults dressed up in the parks. That's against their rules and stuff like that. But
what is against their rules?
I'm guessing
the adults are not allowed to dress up.
Adults can't like dress up like, because they don't want a situation where somebody's dressed up like, say, an actor and say like Prince Charming and be like, "Hey kids, I'm Prince Charming. Come here. Why don't you take some pictures with me?"
I feel like you learned this the hard way.
That's not something that would be my.
So they don't want like a Times Square situation, like fake Spider-Man.
Pretty much.
Right.
Yeah.
Interesting. So if you show up like in a, let me pick a character that comes to my head, a Woody costume, like you were dressed like Woody, they would be like, "Sir, please discard your Woody outfit in the garbage can before entering the park."
I think it, like, you could wear like a Woody t-shirt or something like that, but it can't, or you can debatably say that's the cast member playing Woody, if you will.
Interesting. So you like, I wonder where the line is drawn. Like I wonder if they have like a judge, you know, like not quite realistic enough, or like over the edge, like, "Oh man, he looks too much like a costume." Like, where does the fandom line, you know, move?
Well, I would say mask would be an automatic disqualification. Got it. I think that would be a thing right there.
All right,
there.
What about like Gaston, like that dude from Beauty and the Beast with the ponytail who's jacked? What if you just happen to have a jacked guy that likes to wear like period-esque clothes? Like,
I think it would depend on the hair. Like, if he's got that big, poofy, freaking haircut, they go, "Okay, that's enough.
All right.
We know what you're doing here."
We see where you're going with this. But for girls, or women, you know, like, dress up just like a pretty princess in a yellow dress. Maybe that's just what I wear on roller coasters.
I guess also it depends, like, you can have like a nice skirt. Like, you see some of my wife's outfits and all, it's Disney themed, but it's not like full blown costume. I feel that's fine, but like the dress that's like 10 feet wide on each side of your legs,
so you think
that takes up like half the roadway, I think they might go, "Okay, caution, come here."
So you think maybe they have like a turnstile or something, that if the dress is hitting either side of it, nah, you gotta trim that down before entering the park.
You gotta be this tall to ride, and if you're this wide, you're getting thrown out of the park.
I'd imagine riding a roller coaster in a Victorian style dress would not be the best either. It would definitely flip forward.
That's
it might suffocate
on those.
It might suffocate the rider.
You imagine somebody like, "Oh man, I made a funny face. I can't really see the picture," and it's just like a big 1800 dress like poofed up in the air over your face.
Yeah. So I don't know. That was my anniversary, Berto. I guess that's it. We got a lot of stuff coming up on the horizon, so we don't need to be, you know, doing overtime here because we got a lot of episodes coming up. So I guess, Berlew, let's wrap it up. Anything to promote before we rock and roll out of here?
I guess I will promote for local businesses. I'm going to go back to Jersey for one of my stomping grounds. I used to love going to Manscart Brewing. They're a friend of the podcast. Got some incredible beers there. They also do flavored seltzers. Have been really popular as of late. Jeff has been a very good supporter of us, and he's made some really fine beers. They're over in Hackettstown, New Jersey, yep. Right off the strip by another brewery, Zigmeister. Zigmeister. So check them out. No, they're in a former bank. They have a big octopus painted in the tasting room. Now, granted, in this day and age, you'll have to take out, but fully support Manscript Brewing.
Yeah, they were they sponsored the show on and off for a little while. We have talks with Joe about possibly putting on comedy there when they return. So I still talk with them all the time. So Manscript's a good promotion, and I'm going to promote just because I posted something today that I know I promoted them a couple weeks ago, but because of the time and the pandemic. A friend of mine and his girlfriend and grandma actually started making masks, university-themed, mostly college-themed. They did a lot of Penn State stuff. And, you know, they really put them out there, and they got over 300 orders over the weekend. And they made me a Giants mask. I know it's not university, but the mask is, you know, listen, we might be wearing these things for the next 4 or 5 months. Who knows? Maybe longer, maybe shorter. I don't know. But I think they're about $10, different colleges and whatnot. You could wash them and dry them and all that stuff. And it goes to a good cause. They donate $1 out of every purchase to the hospital of that college. So whatever hospital takes care of that area. And they are university masks. And on Instagram, they're at university_masks. So they made me a comfortable Giants one. My joke today was I hope that it provides more protection than the Giants offensive line.
And that's what you did there.
In one day, Berlew, Pug McGraw, and that mask joke. So it is.
You're going places. Let's go, Jaren. Let's go.
I don't know if I should do that virtual show tomorrow. I think I'm out of material or not. But
we'll release the show after that, so you can just like the people on the virtual. Oh man, that's
yeah.
Never heard anything like that.
And on the podcast front, so I started a little Instagram thing that I would love if you guys followed or shared or whatnot. Berlew, we've done Mount Rushmore on the show, which is, you guys could figure it out. We do our top four of different categories. We haven't done it in a little while. Maybe we'll pick one for next week to do it, to kind of go along with this, I don't know, promotion or campaign, if you will, or I don't know. But we're doing the top four interviews in different categories. We put it out there to some of our fans or listeners, if you will, and they voted. The first one we put up was athletes, and that came down to Lenny Dykstra, Dan Severn, Dave Andrechuk, and Trent Dilfer. So we're just kind of celebrating our past, and maybe people could go check out old episodes and whatnot. So we'll have a couple of those going out. And
maybe one day Jamie Lynn Watson will join a Mount Rushmore.
There you go. Mount Rushmore of phone-related guests.
Well, we could probably do TV commercials. We got the Geico Can in there, so we just need – oh, and Terry Tate.
Oh, woo!
That's three. We got to find one more, Scott. We got to get that mountain climbed.
Not a bad idea. Not a bad idea. But, guys, other than that, that's it. You could keep following the podcast by subscribing, sharing, and help us out by leaving reviews on iTunes. We've had some really, really amazing episodes. I got really good reviews from a couple people on the Toby Philpott episode. I got reviews. Mike, someone actually told me, a good friend of mine told me he was listening. he started listening to our podcast. He never really did until now. And he started, the first episode he listened to was the Cheese Lady episode. The first one he tuned in out of our set of 290. But Berlew, he said that you were actually really funny. He drinks a lot. So I don't know if, you know.
Is that our friend Steve?
No, it wasn't Steve. It wasn't Steve. No, but we've gotten some good reviews. We got some cool feedback lately. So I'm happy. So guys, that's it. Life is funny. Laugh at it and keep the wind your back.
A good night to my friend Wild Thing Bitch Williams.
Who?
Mitch Williams.
Oh! Bitch Williams. Pug McGraw, everybody. Bye-bye.
Ain't all right. The hardness of my head. Close your eyes, spin around, say part time you could find ain't the way that you want. But it's still alright.